Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go, 9:09, and I guess there comes a time for everybody. We found out that Arthur Hardy, the creator of the Mardi Gras Guide, is going to retire, and Ian McNulty referred to him as New Orleans' number one Mardi Gras authority. Ian is normally with us at this time, but couldn't be, but it's worked out because we wanted to talk to Arthur Hardy anyway. He's our friend. How you doing, Arthur?
Good morning, Tommy. How are you, buddy?
I'm okay. I'm glad to hear about your retirement and sorry to hear about it all at the same time. I know you have family out of the country, and I guess you decided to just spend some more time enjoying life?
Yes, indeed. There's a time, and I think this is it. But I'm not going yet. Ain't there no more yet.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a magazine to put out, and I'll be doing this, by Ash Wednesday officially. I'll be out the door. They say it's better to walk out the door than be thrown out the door, carried out the door.
Right.
So I'll be 80 years old next year. I think it's
no, really.
Yep. Been a great ride, though, man.
Yourself like that. You carry yourself like you're a lot younger than. Well, let me ask you this. I know you're affiliated with carnival organizations. Even though you're retiring from the guide, you're not retiring from Mardi Gras itself, are you?
Oh no. I plan to ride and plan to be able to see more parades now. Actually, I love parades, and because I'm locked in media wise. With one television station, I can't see three parades in a night. I'm stuck at one, and so you'll see me on the street. I can promise you.
So, will you still be doing TV work or not?
No. I'm making a clean break from everything. I think that's the easiest way to do it. And I'm looking forward to it. When I travel, when I spend time with the family, as you mentioned, I have my daughter works at the Nobel Institute in Oslo, Norway, and his twins, and it's a long trip. We're going to be able to get over there more often, and two grandsons here in New Orleans, so I'll be busy.
So let me ask you this. Is there an heir apparent? Do you hand the torch to somebody or not?
Well, the Times-Picayune bought Georgia's media, bought mm-hmm. the magazine 3 years ago and allowed me to stay on through this anniversary issue to run it. They've got a whole staff of people led by Victor Andrews, who's a big Mardi Gras connoisseur and knows a whole lot, knows all the players and where the bodies are buried. So it's gonna be fine. The magazine will continue, and probably my name will still be on it. And I'll be around. But I just think it's appropriate to make a clean break and do some other things with the last 25 years of my life. I'm planning to make it to at least 100, so I've got some more time to go.
Tell me about some of the coverages that you've done, people you've worked with, because I'm looking at an article here that you sent me. I see you with Garland and Angela when they were at Channel
yep.
4. You and then with David Tyree here at WWO.
Yeah.
You've been doing this a while.
I have, and that article is actually going to be in our 50th anniversary edition, kind of a look back on how the magazine developed. When we started, we didn't have any money to advertise, so being king cheap, as my daughter calls me, we try to figure out how to get free publicity, and that was by trading magazines for ads. For radio station, we're going to do a giveaway, give them $300 worth of magazines, and then give us $300 worth of quote-unquote free ads, and that's how it all started, really. No matter how good your product is, if people don't know about it, we've really been blessed, and I worked for all three major TV stations in town, and all have been wonderful. And I was pleasantly, more than surprised, shocked that Channel 4 did a little feature on me last night, mm-hmm. looking back through the years. That normally doesn't happen when you work for Station B. Station A doesn't put you on the air unless you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really flattered by that. And anyhow, it's just been great, man. I think I'm one of the luckiest people alive, really.
So when you were a kid, I don't think you envisioned yourself being the publisher of the Mardi Gras guy, did you?
No. I wanted to be a band director. I became one. I used to go to parades and march in parades as a kid. But, no, the Mardi Gras business was nowhere near my mind until the late 70s, really, when we did the first Mardi Gras guy. We worked on it in 1976, but it came out in 77.
So when it comes to you as a kid, you wanted a career in music, you wanted a career in marching band, that's what you wanted to do ever since the time you were a little bit, or what?
I wanted to be a band director. And
you knew that as of what age, Arthur?
I think around 13. That was my goal. My brother was a musician, and I was in a school band and idolized my band director, Jerry St. Amand, and wanted to be like him. Wound up student teaching under him and teaching back at my junior high school alma mater, then Beauregard Junior High.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I wound up as band director, Brother Martin, for 16 years. But no, I knew what I wanted to do. And at that point, it wasn't Mardi Gras, but it sort of was a hobby developed into a business.
Can I ask you a dumb question, which is, how do you go about as a band director deciding who marches where to form what?
Oh, in terms of the band formation?
Yeah, like at halftime, if you want to spell out something or along those lines, the famous script Ohio, how do you go about even designing all of that?
No, well, it's pretty complicated. Unfortunately, my co-band director, Marty Hurley, who sadly passed away about 8 years ago, was in charge of that, was an absolute expert at it. So I didn't have to know how to do it. I was smart enough to hire somebody who did. But it is complicated. And speaking of how do you make decisions, you know, any decent high school band gets invitations to virtually every parade, you know, and you do get a stipend to march in a parade. You're paid. Mm-hmm. The band is paid. Not the band, but the school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always a tough decision. So I've asked Marty Hurley, my assistant, you make those decisions because every crew in town is going to lean on me. Hey, you know, I'll give you information for your magazine if you march in my parade. No, mm-hmm. we don't do that. But that's a tough call because you want to go where the kids will be seen by the most people. It's a great recruiting tool, you know. So do you do one parade in St. Tammany, one in the West Bank? Well, how do you make those decisions? And fortunately, again, I didn't have to worry about that.
You know, I never thought about it as a recruiting tool until you said that, but I guess that's the best way to advertise the school a lot of people, huh?
Yeah, more people see you one parade than 1,000 football games, you know, And every block is a different audience, so you need to be sharp throughout the parade. And, of course, the minute you finish playing the song, the next block, hey, come y'all, don't play nothing.
Right,
play
exactly.
You can't play
constantly. You can't do it all the time. How do you decide, since we're talking about band and that was an important part of your life, how do y'all decide when to play?
Well, normally, of course, by reviewing stands, you know, Gallagher Hall, things like that. But wherever you think the audience is, the crowd's big, major intersections, maybe a little bit in the formation area and a little bit at the end. But you try to space it out. I never counted how many times we played in a, you know, let's say a 5 mile parade, but it was a bunch. But, you know, the fatigue factor is you got to save the kids. You know, you can always tell the out of town bands because in the first two blocks, they let it all out and they got nothing left. Our parades are long, you know, Macy's, Rose Parade, are a mile and a half, and bands that come down here and after the third of the parade, they're ready to get back on the bus, but the bus isn't there. It's at the end of the route, so you got to go 2 more hours.
Do you go in with a playlist?
Oh, yeah. We at Brother Martin, we always memorize. It made the students memorize. You don't have to carry, you know, sheet music in the foot fold or anything. Mm-hmm. So we had maybe 6 or 7 tunes, and would alternate them, you know. But I still miss that. I still have my hand in a little bit. But those great days, and I enjoyed walking with the band. You got to see so many people at street level, you know. And most people were complimentary. Some would tell you that their band is better, and maybe it was. I don't know.
So when you were marching in a Mardi Gras parade, is that what really turned you on to Mardi Gras, or were you a big Mardi Gras fan before?
Oh, no, I was always a Mardi Gras fan. Any kid in New Orleans, you know. And again, mm-hmm. I marched in my first prayer when I was 13 years old. The side note there, my band director, Jerry St. Amon, I wasn't that good. And so he knew I wanted to march. So although I was in the band, I didn't march with my trumpet. He let me carry the American flag, which I thought was very, very kind.
Wait a minute, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'd have let you march with the trumpet. I just wouldn't let you play.
Yeah, well, you know, band writers tell stories about taking kids' mouthpieces right before the parade. Mm-hmm. I can't find my mouth. Oh, that's all right. Just carry it on.
Just carry it. You'll be fine. Just hold it up to your mouth.
That.
Nobody will know.
But I thought about it.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. I want to talk about, first of all, somebody texted in. Congratulations. Somebody else texted in. Wants to know, Mardi Gras Guide is going to go on, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And will you have any hand in it at all, consulting?
We're talking about that.
Okay. All right, we'll take a break, pick it up with Arthur Harding when we come back. Y'all got any questions or comments, 504-260-1870. Stepping down, and that's going to be a bittersweet moment for him, man, when the police come down, or I guess when Rex meets Comus for him, and he realizes that that's it. No more Mardi Gras guy. Won't have to start preparing on Ash Wednesday. He'll be able to head off to Oslo, Norway. 920, more in a flash, WWL. October, but it still seems good to hear. It sounds good to hear it. Arthur Hardy is our guest. He announced his retirement, and not yet. He's going to be around through midnight Mardi Gras this year. Arthur, where did the news of his death has been greatly exaggerated, right?
Yeah,
he's not dying. He's not gone anywhere. Arthur's retiring, unlike me. I want to die behind this microphone. Ideally, Arthur, I would say, all right, Newell, we'll be listening, and then my head hits the microphone, and that's it. Lights out.
What a way to go, huh?
Yes, exactly. Where did the no worries about retirement or anything else? Tell me about the idea for the guide. Where did that come from? Because I don't think people today, people take a lot of things for granted. And they don't realize back in the day, you had no idea. There's no Mardi Gras hotline you call. No crew has a number listed. So if you were wondering, is the parade going to roll? Is it not going to roll? Blah, blah, blah. Tell me about it.
Well, when I was at Loyola University, I had a part-time job answering the phones at WSMB Radio. In fact, I stayed on there part-time well into the early 1980s, even when I was teaching. And each Mardi Gras season, people would call, well, can you tell me about the parade? So every morning, I would get the newspaper, cut out all the parade maps, put it on one sheet to give the announcers. And it occurred to me,
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, you got like TV Guide to lay out a week's worth of television doing one out of Mardi Gras. Nobody had thought of it. It was a simple idea. But
do you remember the moment you thought of that? Was it like light bulb went off? Was like
No.
It was an evolution?
Over time, you know, but it just it seemed like such a simple idea, and it wasn't simple to pull off, but it was an easy idea, and an easy idea to, you know, have in your head, but okay, now what do we do, coach? You couldn't look up the crew of Endymion in a phone book and get Ed Muniz's phone number, you know?
Right.
So it took some time and effort, and the business really was a financial failure for the first 4 years, but we stuck with it. But obviously there was a need for it, and now, I mean, information is available everywhere, and that's why the magazine has to have more than just maps in it. We expanded it to, you know, have a lot of stories in it. And I mean, my goal always was to somebody, well, if they're not from here, that the magazine would tell them, you know, in capsule form what they need to know. But But if you are from here, that you pick it up and say, man, you remember this? I hadn't thought about this in 20 years more. I've been here my whole life and I didn't know this. You know, so it's kind of two different target audiences, I guess, in terms of what does the magazine bring to you that you wouldn't have had if you hadn't bought it at KMB. Remember KMB? That was my biggest outlet. Ain't there no more.
Got any ice cream. Somebody texted in and said, I have all the Mardi Gras guide issues. Thanks for what you did for Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras Mike, I know a lot of people after Katrina and some of the other floods that happened were upset because they lost their past copies, back copies of the Mardi Gras guide. Are back issues still available if somebody wanted all 50 of them, Arthur?
No, not really. In a couple of years, I don't have more than five or six myself. You know, the first year we did 5,000 copies. Yeah, I don't have, I mean, I have all of them, but not like, you know, 20 of each year or anything.
Yeah.
But okay. The first year we did 5,000 copies and we only sold 1,500. Mm. And I burned them, the rest of them, except for a few. Never knowing that it, I didn't even know if there'd be a second one, let alone, you know, keep
had
going.
No idea, because now, boy, people would be clamoring for those.
Yeah, I'd like to have some myself. I'm not a handful. But in the second year, 1978, we did 5,000 again, and we sold them almost all. I mean, like all but 100. So then we figured, all right, we're going to roll the dice and do 10,000 in 1979, and that was a police strike. So we didn't sell hardly any. Burned some more copies. So it was a critical
situation. You're hoping for a cold winter. Hoping for a cold March. Let's hope we got some cold fronts coming through in March because we got some guides to burn, right?
I laugh now, but I wasn't laughing then.
No, I bet you weren't.
My wife said, you know, we were more stubborn than smart.
So let me ask you this. In the 50 years you've been doing this, what are some of the more substantial changes in Mardi Gras that you've seen?
Oh, God. And we will cover this in the magazine this year. I mean, certainly the growth. I mean, in 1977, Endymion had 700 members. Now you've got 15 clubs with 1,000 members. Endymion, 3,300. Iris, that's the other big change. The women have taken over Mardi Gras. Iris has
largest crew, right?
Members. Yeah. We have number one. Cleopatra's above 2,000, so is Femme Fatale. I mean, it's Mardi Gras is much more diverse now, more opportunity for people. The addition of the alternative parades, Chewbacca's, Crew de Vue, and then the female walking groups and rolling alibi. None of that was there in 1977. The biggest thing is no more neighborhood parades. We had parades in probably 12 different neighborhoods in 1977. Mm-hmm. Now everybody wants to be on the St. Charles Avenue run, you know, so it's changed, it's grown. It's never been bigger. It may be getting too big. That's my big concern right now is, how much is too much? We have to be careful. We don't overdo it.
I know people in Allen. I knew once they went to St. Charles, they were not going back to De Gaulle and Berman Highway. No disrespect to De Gaulle and Berman Highway. But
no, I'm with you. Yeah. The audience has changed, and you either move or you perish. St. Bernard lost, I think, 18 parades. And now they have only one. Just through the years, you know, people's tastes change. What they want to see, and we've become so jaded with throws now. We used to be happy to get a couple of doubloons and some.
Yeah, I'm gonna get to that in a second. Nantok will never leave Algiers, though. Do
oh,
you
no.
think?
No, the pride of Algiers. Hell no. No, they're there forever. God bless.
And do you see ever like a Mardi Gras returning to Gretna, or I guess they have one parade in St. Bernard now, is that right?
Yes, they do on the first Saturday, Nemesis, yeah. Well, anything can change. I mean, who would have predicted all the changes that have happened? I don't know. But again, St. Charles Avenue is in Canal Street for Endymion, seem to be where the parades want to be, and who can blame them? You know, to parade under 200-year-old oak trees, it's...
All right, Arthur, we lost Arthur Hardy, so let's take a break here, 9:32, 28 till 10. We'll look at traffic, then we'll try to reconnect with Arthur when we come back on WWL. 9:38, 22 till 10, back with Arthur Hardy, who is retiring on Ash Wednesday, right at midnight, I guess, at Mardi Gras, and he is the founder of the Mardi Gras Guide. We're just kind of finding out a little bit about him. Everybody has a story, and we're hearing his. Arthur, when it comes to Mardi Gras, and I'm going to bring up three very controversial words. Dorothy Mae Taylor And Lord mm-hmm. knows if you were here during that period how, what's the word I'm thinking of? Disruptive it was, but disruptive doesn't necessarily have to be a bad word. Would Mardi Gras be where it is today when you look at all the parades during the week, if not for Dorothy Mae Taylor, if the Old Line crews had not made way for some of the crews that replaced them? All right. Arthur dropped out again. So apparently somebody jamming his signal to make sure. We'll try to wait to see if he... But Dorothy Mae Taylor, for those of you that don't know, she, back in 1992, she... And I'm going to try to encapsulate this as accurately as I can and as briefly as I can. Basically, she was saying that if crews used public streets, then they had to open themselves up to the general public. Or at least open themselves up to people of different races and not discriminate. So, because you can still, an organization can still pick and choose who joins so long as it's not based on race, as I understand it. So Arthur Hardy's back. Arthur, Dorothy Mae Taylor, would Mardi Gras be where it was today without her?
Oh, I think so. I think so. Integration was happening anyway.
Okay.
It may have accelerated it a little bit. But, you know, look at where it is today. And if, I guess if people want to give her credit for speeding up the process, then that's fine. But, I mean, there's a place for everybody now in Mardi Gras. Not everybody can do everything. But if you can't find a spot, you're not trying. Now, obviously, it costs money, you know. But I've been getting texts on my phone.
Wait, if you can't find a spot to ride, not a spot to start
exactly,
a parade.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
A couple of texts I got. The Mardi Gras will be out right before Christmas. And the Picayune's doing a hardcover coffee table book with all 50 of our back issue covers.
Oh, awesome.
And a highlight from each year that I've written and more than 200 photos. So that's going to be available at NOLA.com. And what I'm really excited about, in addition to that, WYS is planning a 30-minute documentary on my 50 years in the business. Dennis Walton's going to do it, if they can get the funding. You know, they've lost all kind of federal funding. So mm-hmm. I'll be out in the corner shaking cans trying to get supporters for our documentary.
But would you consider any kind of GoFundMe thing or anything like that?
Oh, no. They can't. PBS can't do that, no.
Oh,
and I'm joking. I'm sure the money's going to come in. But I love YES and been doing Stepping Out with Errol and Peggy, Stepping Out Carnival Time since 1987. Every year we do a little preview of the season, and that will continue. I want to do that. It's so much fun, and they're so knowledgeable and such good people. And in fact, you were MC this year when Peggy got the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Press Club. So we all go back a long way, don't we?
Yeah, I that's right. I did MC that event. When it comes to differences in throws, you started to talk about this earlier, and I know having written a little bit of time that I did. Back in the day, man, as a kid watching a parade, you'd grab any kind of bead you could, doubloons, whatever. Now, unless it's, they're very selective about what they'll even bend over to pick up. Talk about that, if you will, the changes in the throws and so forth.
We've become spoiled and jaded, you know, and that's why so many beads and even doubloons are winding up in the catch basins. People won't even bend over to pick them up. And, you know, you don't. Well, I wish you went to Mardi Gras parades for more than throws, but it's become an important part. And in fact, one of the first things that the Mardi Gras guy did that was different was we were the first to ever publish what the crews were going to throw. The newspaper did not do that. There was no interest, I guess, in it. And that became one of the selling points, is you'll not only know the theme, but what you're going to catch.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a monster now, and the budgets for throws, I mean, we both know many people who ride in parades. I don't know anybody who spends less than a grand on things to give away to people you don't even know. You know,
that'd be a bare minimum, $1,000. That'd be a bare minimum, $1,000. I don't think that would get you started even. Arthur, when it comes to
– first six blocks.
Yeah, really, exactly. When it comes to the balloons, are they still popular or not?
Well, they made a little bit of a comeback, but not what they once were. And I always thought it was the perfect throw, you know, because it's inexpensive. It'll last for 1,000 years. It says I was at this parade. You've got the date, the theme, the logo. But again, it doesn't sing and dance and make breakfast for you. So it's not as attractive as it once was.
And along those lines, real quick, where are we going with that? Because it seems like they're going from stuff you can't use to stuff that they want you to take home and use, and I guess that promotes security, right?
Yeah, locally sourced throws that are environmentally friendly. There's a big push towards that. And I have to admit, I was wrong. I thought this movement would never take off, but it has. Now, it still isn't the majority of throws aren't that way, but I'm glad to see it. I think it's healthy, and who knows what innovator will come up with something new. And it's such a big business. And one of the unique things about this is that, you don't need, it's not like the Olympics where you have to get an official license, something. You come up with a good idea, you do it. I mean, it's entrepreneurship at its best, and no official products, no advertising. Nobody does anything like this. Think of any sporting event. It's always brought to you by some company. The Citizens are the company that produced Mardi Gras, and it's a very unique celebration.
Greatest free show on earth for anybody but those riding. Real quick, and get back to Dorothy Mae Taylor for a second. You mentioned it about it takes money, and I think there was a lapse after that where there might have been a void for parades, and then the vacuum was filled. But one thing that did come out of that was that it takes money to produce a parade, and it is not the greatest free show on earth. When it comes to funding for parades, I know at one point the crews had said that the casinos hurt them because it took away their bingos, et cetera.
Right.
What are you hearing about funding for parades now for crews and organizations?
Well, there's some concern about the tariffs, what's that going to do to the cost of throws. Mm-hmm. But generally, dues and throw sales are what finance the Mardi Gras crews. And I don't see that changing. Insurance is another real cost that crews have to deal with. You talked about crews coming in and filling the void. Mm-hmm. Since 1977, there have been 76 parades that have gone out of business. 76.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So, but they're replaced by other crews, So the cycle continues. I don't think it's ever going to compress significantly. Got more than 50 parades in the three parish area. It might go down to 47. It's not going to go up to 60. But I think we're about as big as we can be. You mentioned Alla, which they moved to St. Charles Avenue, but they were finishing at 1 o'clock in the morning because they were the third of a triple header. Well, that problem's been solved. They moved into the spot Knicks had on Wednesday night following the Druids. And now we're hearing that the Thursday night, where Muses has been finishing late, the parades are going to start an hour earlier, and that's not definite yet. That's coming before the council next week. So an earlier starting time will get parades theoretically off the street if you don't have a breakdown.
Right. We got to go, but I ask you real quick, 30 seconds left. Last year we started Mardi Gras early because of the rain, and it seemed as though everybody embraced it. No chance we go back to that, huh?
Oh, no, I don't think so. No, okay. No, that was a one-off.
I liked it better. Thank you, Arthur. I appreciate it. Have a good time.
Thanks,
and I know you're not going away because we'll talk to you during Mardi Gras.
Absolutely. You count on it.
Hi, man. Thank you.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.